Welcome to The Good Goddess Show, a weekly podcast for women who are fed up, are feeling bloated and tired. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, holistic nutritionist and all-around health geek. Let's dive in to the show. So welcome to episode 61 of The Gut Goddess Show. And today I'm starting a mini series called Beat the Bloat mini series. And I'm talking about how I ditched my IBS and why I had IBS, what was going on, what are the tests you can do if you have IBS or any of these digestive issues, and my own journey of basically being IBS free. I would never describe myself now as someone having IBS, but I used to be incontinent, stuck on the toilet, bloated, all the things, having biopsies and tubes up and down and all of those kinds of things. So that's what we're going to talk about today, which is exciting. But before we dive on the 27th of this month, so you could be listening to this in real time, then on the 27th of May, I'm running my Beat the Bloat challenge, hence doing the Beat the Bloat series. I thought that'd be a nice, see what I did there? Nice little dovetail. So my shameless plug for this week is join me in the challenge. If you want 5 days of free coaching, great community support, meal plan recipes, a chance to ask your questions, if you want to kickstart beating the bloat, sorting out your belly, getting your energy back, and feeling really, really good, join me in my 5-day Beat the Bloat Challenge. You can sign up at supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP/bloat. So you can find the note, the link in the show notes for this, or head to supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP/bloat. And it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be super, super good. So if you want help, if you need a kickstart, you need a refresh, you need to hit the reset button, you're feeling like you spiraled, you're really confused, you're totally overwhelmed, you're sick of being bloated and having a big belly and you're tired, join me in the Beat the Bloat Challenge because it'll be so much fun. Otherwise, I think that's it. I'm actually recording this life update from me. My little baby is just having his first morning at nursery. So I'm recording this episode. Anyone that's ever sent a child to nursery will know the slight intrepidation that I feel. His dad dropped him off. I sent him with his bag packed with every possible item one could ever need. There was like 3 changes of clothes, 5 bottles of extra spare milk, a sun hat, a winter hat, gloves, mittens, you know, all the things, snacks, just everything. But gosh, yeah. So that's basically my big life update. Is I'm my little boy will be going to nursery 2 mornings a week. So I'm going to have 2 mornings in a week to make awesome podcasts and resources. And I've got some really exciting stuff in the works for you, just like the Beat the Bloat Challenge. So that's happening in a couple of weeks. And it means I can do that by someone else looking after him. Because it really does take a village, doesn't it, guys? But anyway, let's get on with the show. So we are going to dive in and, as part of this kind of mini Beat the Bloat series, look at how I ditched my own IBS. This is kind of part one. And in this episode, we're going to dive in a little bit of my story, a bit of background, what was going on. And also, I'm going to share a lot about different tests you can do for IBS and kind of explain a little bit about what is happening when you maybe have IBS, or maybe you don't have that diagnosis, but you don't feel like your digestion is that awesome. So this is hopefully going to be a bit eye-opening for you when you actually realize, oh, like there is a reason I have IBS. It's not all in my head, or it's not just something I have to live with. I think we get told a lot that we should just tolerate things. And I know for me, I was told, oh, there's nothing you can do, just deal with it. Here's some medications, like just move on with your life. And I just didn't want to tolerate being stuck on the toilet with embarrassing symptoms all the time. So I'm going to dive deep. I'm probably going to have some good old moments of TMI, but whenever I share things that are really, blunt or detailed or graphic, I do it because sometimes it's funny, but also I know for a long time I was really embarrassed about some of my health symptoms. I just felt so ashamed of them that as like an adult, I had these problems, and that's why I talk about them, because if you have a symptom, whatever it is, you know, you don't need to be embarrassed or ashamed about it. And actually that stopped me from talking to people, from getting the help I needed for a while because I was too embarrassed. So that is why I do sometimes do a little bit of TMI, because I want you to know that you're not alone and that I've probably experienced most of the embarrassing things you have throughout my kind of health history. Generally had a nice or well-rounded view of kind of mild, awful health problems. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So when it comes to IBS, and this would also relate if you're just struggling with bloating as well. Although if you are bloated and your bowels have maybe been different from normal and you haven't been to the doctor yet, do go to the doctor. IBS isn't a thing to necessarily self-diagnose. That's not the best idea for that. So it's worth it just so the doctor can check and exclude any other potential things going on. So don't just assume you have IBS. If your bowels have changed, if you're suddenly bloated and you haven't been before, go to the doctor, just get it checked through, and then they'll probably give you an IBS diagnosis. And so what happens with that diagnosis is you'd go to the doctor and they basically rule out lots of other things. So IBS is a diagnosis kind of exclusion. So they'll exclude things like colitis and Crohn's and other kind of inflammatory diseases. And then once they've kind of ruled out, you know, it's definitely not this and this and these more severe diseased states, once they've ruled those out, once they've maybe done blood work, tested your stool, those kind of things, and feel confident that it's not something more serious going on, then they'll probably give you that diagnosis of IBS if you're still having symptoms. So it's a kind of a diagnosis slash non-diagnosis. It doesn't really mean anything. Everyone's IBS can be really different. It's not a diagnosis of we know why this is happening. It just basically means we know something, we know that what's happening with you isn't awful. It's not a terrible autoimmune disease necessarily, but so it's not necessarily going to kill you, but we don't really know what it is. Here's some abeverin or whatever the medications they may offer you. So it is important though that you do go through that process just to check on things, but it is this diagnosis of exclusion. So which is why people like me and maybe you or you know people have really struggled with it for a long time, because there's no real solution to it. And often people there can be the approach that it's just because you're anxious and worried and you just need to calm down. You might be offered antidepressants because you know you're so worried about it, and it's a bit of a misunderstood area. So for me, it started from a child. I've always had tummy upsets and complaints. I remember going to a pediatrician and going to the doctors a lot about my tummy. They didn't really know why. I was probably too young to have an IBS thing then, or it just wasn't talked about as much. I was very anxious as well. So the IBS and anxiety and depression do often go hand in hand. And I can explain a little bit more about that in a bit. So that began as a child, and then it just got worse as, you know, got into teenage years. Those are fraught with anxiety, aren't they? Being a teenager, gosh, honestly, you could not pay me £1 million to go back and be a teenager. I'm so glad. I sometimes get into like cold sweats just thinking about my son becoming a teenager in like 13 years time. I'm like, oh my gosh. Anyway, side note. I will work through it with my therapist, I'm sure. And so as a teenager, it kind of just kept on getting worse. So the stomach pains and the, I mean, to be fair, I've always had weird toilet habits. We went on a road trip as a family across America when I was like 9 years old, and the whole family joked that I like wanted to visit all of America's toilets because I was just wanting to stop to the toilet probably every like hour. And that definitely was linked with the anxiety and definitely linked with probably some bowel kind of irregularity going on then. By the time I was about 16, I was probably saying I was having diarrhea regularly. And then as I got older, when I was more like 18, 19, it was probably happening 4, 5, 6 times a day of kind of going to the toilet and having kind of diarrhea type stools. And it was also getting to the point then where it's getting a bit out of control and led to kind of moments of incontinence when I was out and about, and I started to take spare pants with me wherever I went. Everywhere I went, anywhere new, I liked to know where all the toilets were. So if I was meeting a friend to go for a walk in a park, I wanted to know if there was any public toilets or if there was like a wooded area one could go in. I've had to do a lot of wild poos in my time. Of just because that kind of incontinence, it was just getting really bad. And it was super embarrassing. Like, I didn't even talk about it for a long time. I only feel comfortable now talking about it like 10 years later, but it was really embarrassing. And I just felt really ashamed. And it also came with horrible nausea. I remember sitting so much on the toilet with my eyes closed, just thinking I was going to pass out because it was so, like, but not because of pain, because of the nauseous. I've just felt so nauseous. And the only time I felt similar is when I was pregnant and very nauseous and sick that whole time there. It's not exactly the same, but a similar kind of, you feel so nauseous that you actually can't quite see. Maybe similar to migraines, those kinds of things. And every time I went to the toilet, so I remember going to the toilet at uni and just like deep breathing and closing my eyes and like slumping as I sat on this toilet, just waiting for it to pass. And it would often pass in about 5 or 10 minutes. Once I'd gone to the loo, it would pass and then I could kind of carry on. But it wasn't that pleasant. I was also super bloated all the time as well. So by the end of the day, I would get bloated. And this definitely got worse as time goes on. People used to ask me if I was pregnant in the shop or clothes wouldn't fit. And yeah, just looked, I genuinely a lot of the time looked about 4 months pregnant. And then at worst would look about 6 months pregnant. And that's when people would be like, when are you due? And I'd be like, I'm not pregnant. And then that, you know, ensues that awful, awkward conversation where they're so embarrassed and you're so embarrassed. And to be honest, I got to the point where I just pretended I was pregnant because I'm such an empathetic person. I felt so bad for them that they would then feel so embarrassed. And so I would just be like, oh, in a couple of months, yeah, I'm really excited. Just because I was like, this just keeps everyone calm. This means no one feels bad. So I just pretended I was only to like the checkout lady. I'm not talking like total pretended I was pregnant to my friends. Just like someone would mention I was pregnant at the checkout and I'd go, oh yeah, yeah. And then move on, you know, that not any serious deception going on. And then also along came with that, I was diagnosed as depressed probably when I was about like 19, probably between ages, to be honest, probably between the ages of 18 and 20. And so about those 2 years, I went to the doctor, did the questionnaire, diagnosed with depressed. So that was going on. I also had, my hormones were weird. My period would disappear for 3 months and then come back and then disappear. And then I'd have like two in like 2 weeks. And then it was all over the shop. I also had, just a whole bunch of stuff going on, skin issues and thrush, and my energy wasn't that great. And, it was just a bit of a hot mess. And so I was diagnosed with IBS probably at about 16 or 17 at the time. They offered me different medications at the time. So that was things just to help with like cramping and the kind of gut motility. So like mebeverin, and I think it's called colpramin. I also got prescribed peppermint oil capsules, and used to use heat patches a lot. Had a lot of hot baths, spent a lot of time not going out because it was just too painful. I think the pain sometimes can be quite underrated. And so if you listen to this and you don't have IBS and you're a bit like, people that tell you have IBS, you're a bit like, oh, whatever. There is totally different spectrum. Someone might say they have IBS because they're bloated once a month. And then for other people, it can be really debilitating and they're struggling with incontinence and they're worried to go to the toilet. And then it becomes this vicious cycle because if you know you're bothered about your bowels or if you'll still fit into your clothes at 4 o'clock. And so you want to plan everything. This can make you feel really anxious and nervous. And also from a kind of biochemical side, it really makes sense that a lot of the time with IBS, it really impacts your mental health. And this is a bit of a chicken and egg situation and everyone would be slightly different. But because in the gut, it's where we produce most of our serotonin, and there's a lot that goes on with our serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter, one of many. We don't have one neurotransmitter, we have a lot. But because that so much happens in the gut, if you've got inflammation, if you're not digesting your food properly, which really when we're talking about IBS, we're talking about poor digestion a lot of the time. There's some, from my perspective, when you have IBS, there's something not working optimally in your digestive system, and that's leading to inflammation, to an inability to thoroughly digest things. So when we're talking about IBS, we're really looking at an issue with the digestive system generally. And I've totally lost my train of thought. It'll come back to me. Gut health and mental health. So it really, you've got this inflammation, you've got this problem going on with your digestive system. There's something that's not optimal, it's just not working as well as it could be. And so this really impacts your serotonin production. And obviously that can impact your brain as well. So your brain, serotonin is a nice neurotransmitter. It helps basically keep us oh, it does tons of things. It's really important for gut function, actually. So again, it's not just, the serotonin in the gut isn't just being made there and getting immediately transported to the brain. It's also really important for your kind of gut motility and the actual digestive process as well, which most people don't really think of, which is why it's so common to have maybe an IBD or some IBS or digestive issues that comes with increased anxiety and depression. And now that's twofold as well, because obviously you're maybe going to feel more anxious if you are feeling like you're incontinent or you're bloated or you're in pain a lot of the time, but also biochemically that also is rooted as well. So your gut health and your mental health goes really hand in hand. With my clients, if there's a lot of digestive issues going on, I would say 80% of the time there would also be some mental health or mood thing being impacted as well. So it's not all in your head. And often people can feel dismissed because if they have an IBS or an IBS type symptoms, they can often just feel like they're being a bit anxious or depressed, or like they're kind of making it up in their head. And it's kind of both, actually. Digestive upset can lead to poor mental health, and poor mental health can lead to digestive upset. So it's not all in your head. And also it makes total sense that you would feel anxious if you've got issues going on with your bowels, because I can tell you, it makes you feel pretty worried if you're like going out to meet a friend and you think you're going to crap yourself. Like that's not a peaceful thought. Just putting it out there. So when it comes to looking at IBS, it is really worth just keeping that in mind. Gut health, mental health, really closely linked. So if you have been struggling with your mental health, even if you don't have any digestive issues, you're like, Kezia, actually, I have really been struggling with anxiety. I have really bad anxiety, or I'm really depressed, or I've got other mental health things going on, or maybe bipolar. Even if you're not bloated, you don't have IBS, you don't have digestive systems, you honestly, you could feel so much better by working on your digestion and really optimizing it to make sure that your brain is getting all the essential nutrients that it needs. So that happened, I'm just going back to my story. So at about, it was about age 16, 17, 18, yeah, 16 that I got diagnosed. Then it got much worse, probably till I was 20. And then about 21, 20-ish, I think a doctor mentioned to me that maybe I should try removing dairy and that might help with my diarrhea, which thinking back is amazing. So I did that. I removed dairy, especially milk, from my diet. I think I still had yogurt at the time, and I ditched dairy, and that really helped. And that really just slowly got me onto thinking about this differently. Also, when I went to see lots of different doctors, and I've also had things like sigmoidoscopies and tests. At one point, they thought it would be Crohn's because there was blood and in my stools. So I've had lots of different checks, lots of different people looking at different things. But IBS was a diagnosis that came to in the end. And I was just kind of told that, I mean, this one doctor helpfully said to remove dairy, which is useful. But most of the doctors were like, it's just the way it is. You need to just calm down. Do you want some antidepressants? And it's just the way it is. But I really wanted to like travel to India, to Mexico. I wanted to travel the world. And I knew if I was stuck on the toilet with diarrhea in the UK, I wasn't going to survive in India, let's be honest. And actually, I did go to India and I did get really sick. And that didn't help things. But around 2021, that was really when I decided to be like, okay, well, the doctors say there's nothing they can do for me. I feel quite disappointed with that because I feel like this is ruining my life, to be honest, and getting in the way of all the hopes and dreams that I have for the future, of all the things I wanted to do. And it wasn't just traveling the world. It was like, I wanted to be able to just go for a run without spending 45 minutes before going for a run panicking and worrying about if I'd been to the toilet, if I'd emptied my bowels enough, because I didn't want to have diarrhea on a run. Like, it wasn't just all about traveling the world. It was just my general quality of life. So I started to take it a little bit into my own hands. Also, like things like my thrush was getting worse. And I think by about 21, my depression had slightly eased a little bit. I think I'd taken up exercise. I had started maybe a little bit of counseling at the time, which was helpful. And, but that's really when I just started this whole process of food, looking at food as my medicine, taking alternative approaches, experimenting with ditching sugar to help with my thrush, which made a big difference. And that's never been an issue since. removed wheat for a while, experimented with that. And that is kind of what began. And over the years, and it wasn't an overnight thing, like, you know, I didn't just ditch dairy and then all my IBS totally disappeared. It got better, a little bit better, but it kind of was a gradual process. And for me, it took a good couple of years to really just be my own detective and figure out what was going on, to read the different books and the different research, to test things out, to kind of use myself as a guinea pig and an experiment to figure out what was going on. And then over the years, I learned more about IBS, more about the gut. Obviously, I've retrained, went back to uni for my postgraduate in nutritional science, and have really come to understand. And now, in hindsight, I know exactly why I had IBS. I was on tons of antibiotics as a child. I was a super anxious child. I had lots of medications. My diet growing up was filled with lots of sugar, a lot of sugar, and I had a kind of a slightly binging, unhealthy relationship with food because I started my first diet when I was 11, because I was quite overweight as a child. And so there was all, and like now it makes total sense. Also, I did tests, so I ran some test results to figure out exactly what was going on, and it's not a mystery anymore. And also, I wouldn't say I have IBS. I don't ever, like, you know, on these forms, I would never describe myself as a person as having IBS, and I've not really struggled with IBS type symptoms for probably about 5 or 6 years. Well, maybe 5 years. And it's just not a thing that's an issue anymore. So if you have IBS and you're struggling, it's not a life sentence. You don't have to live with it for the rest of your life at all. It's really about, okay, thinking my digestion is upset. What's going on? So when it comes to IBS and all the things that I've been learning and just digestive issues in general, is there is a reason for it. And this I found so refreshing, because I just thought, I was told they didn't know why, they didn't know what was going on. And then when I did my own research, and since, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, since working with clients, running tests, creating programs, people, and seeing loads and loads of women ditch IBS in my practice through the working with me, there is always a reason for you having it. And if there is a reason for it, then that means you can do something about it. So I'm just going to go through what could be happening. So why might you have IBS? And asking the question why is really, really important for any health issue that you're dealing with. So whether you're maybe 5 stone overweight, ask the question why. Maybe you have really bad psoriasis or eczema. Ask the question why. Maybe you have rheumatoid arthritis. We want to know why. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you can fix everything, because there is some things that we have to accept sometimes, I think. But asking the question why is really important. Why all of a sudden can't you tolerate eating apples? Or why all of a sudden have you got arthritis as a 30-year-old? Or why all of a sudden have you suddenly gotten constipated? And so when you ask that question, you can get some really good results on really good answers. So for me, when I started to ask why do I have IBS? And then when I started working with clients, why do they have IBS? Why are they constipated? Why have they been constipated since childhood? Why do laxatives not work? Why do prune juice not work? Why are they bloated every evening, all the time, no matter what they eat? What is going on there? And I found that obviously everyone is slightly different, but there is some main kind of contributing factors that can really contribute to IBS. And so the first one and the biggest one is for people that find they're really constipated a lot and are just really bloated all the time, then a lot of what could be going on is something called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO for short. This is something you can test for with a breath test. So I've often gotten clients to do this if I really feel like this is going on. And what it is that you kind of get a bit of some of the bacteria that would be in your large intestine. It kind of migrates up to your small intestine, and your small and large intestines have quite different bacterial landscapes. They have a slightly different makeup in a way. And so you get this infection of this kind of large intestine bacteria in your small intestine on a really basic level. And that can cause a lot of havoc, because it's your small intestine where we basically absorb most of our food. So in terms of all your nutrients and proteins and amino acids and vitamins, a lot of that actual absorption of into your body goes on in the small intestine, and a little bit of absorption happens in the large intestine, but not that much. A lot of it's like water and a couple of other things, but in your small intestine, that's where a lot of the absorption of minerals is and vitamins is happening. And it also needs to be at a really specific pH. So pH is that kind of acidity alkaline balance. So your stomach, which goes, you know, food goes into your stomach and then from your stomach into your small intestine. The stomach is a highly acidic place, like a pH of around just over one. So the most acidic you can get. Then your small intestine, you get an injection of bile, and that kind of helps to alkalize. So meaning lower the pH of that kind of partially digested food. So your small intestine, actually, in order for you to absorb your nutrients and in order for it to function, move, and do its thing, it needs to be at a specific kind of pH balance. And it's kind of more, slightly more on the alkaline side as opposed to the acidic. And this added migrated bacteria, this new bacteria that gets introduced to it, messes that pH up a lot. And a lot of what goes on in the body is chemical reactions. And these chemical reactions require the right pH to take place. So sorry, I know that's a little bit geeky, but just in terms of understanding what is going on. So if with SIBO, if you have this bacteria migrating into your small intestine, and it can just cause a load of bother. And that's where the bloating can come in, the constipation or the diarrhea. That's where you can feel super uncomfortable, like you're never digesting food properly. And it can just be a bit of a nightmare. That's where the trapped wind and the pain, all of that can come from that. So SIBO is a big thing. And one paper I was reading said up to 75% of people with IBS actually have this infection. And unfortunately, it's not quite gotten knitted into our kind of NHS system yet. I think it will in the future because the research around it, from as much as I'm aware, is really robust, and other countries treat it. Other countries kind of would have gastroenterologists who would go with it. I have a client at the moment who's in Canada, and she has been tested, and you know, it's just part and process of medical kind of investigation. But that's not the case here. So a lot of my clients have to do it privately, and it's a breath test that you would do. So that's the first thing. The other thing that can be going on is that there is kind of excess permeability of the gut lining. And this can sometimes be called leaky gut. What it basically means is the lining of your intestines is not that happy, and it's letting in more stuff than it should be, and that's causing inflammation. And kind of, if you imagine your gut lining being, this is a metaphor, but being like bruised, inflamed, or grazed, it's just not as resilient and robust as what it could be. And that can cause a lot of problems. That's where a lot of food intolerances can come into play, and a lot of bloating, diarrhea, all of that sort of stuff. So that is, and often a lot of these things aren't exclusive. They kind of can all go in together. So if you have SIBO, you're going to have leaky gut as well. You can have this intestinal permeability. Another issue can be parasites. So for me, I had bad bowels. It was really bad. And then when I went to India, I got a parasite there. And obviously it got much worse because I got super sick while I was away in India. So parasites can play a role. So if you feel like, oh, Kezia, I've never had an issue with my bowel, and then I went over to Ghana and traveled around there, and then I've never been the same since, you might still have a parasite going on. And it's really important that you deal with that, because sometimes these parasitic infections can contribute to more severe kind of bowel diseases if left unchecked. Sometimes a lot of kind of Crohn's, for some people, not for everyone, but I'm pretty sure I read a case study of where someone had really bad Crohn's, and often you get Crohn's around your ileocecal valve. So it's a join between your large and small intestine, and super infective. Often that gets removed. And for this person, they discovered it was a really bad parasitic infection that they thought they'd dealt with and hadn't. So anyway, so parasites, that can be one. And you would discover that through a stool test. So I also will run stool tests with clients quite a lot as well to find out. Other things that can be going on, it's just a lack of good bacteria. So you've just not got that diversity in your gut. And in order to digest, in order to feel good, in order to get all the nutrients from your food, you need a really healthy and diverse and resilient kind of ecosystem of bacteria in your gut. So that is super, super important. You also need the good, as quote unquote, good bacteria, and not too much of the pathogenic, the bad bacteria or yeasts going on. So that is often going, that can also be another issue in terms of why it is that you have IBS. And there is other reasons, there can be other things going on as well, but those I think always will generally play a role. And when it comes to testing, so say you have IBS and you don't know what to do and you've just been fobbed off, then I would really recommend you working with a practitioner like me and getting some stool tests done. So often if you were to come to me with bad IBS and you've had it for a while, I would listen to your symptoms, we'd do our first session, I would ask you lots of questions about your current symptoms, your health history, look at any medications you're on, take a big holistic, big picture view. We spend 90 minutes in that session doing that. And then I would decide whether a stool test or a SIBO test would be most useful. We'd do one of those and then basically put a plan of action depending on what those test results indicate to us and what they suggest. So those are kind of some great tests too. There's other tests I've done as well with clients. Sometimes food intolerance testing can be good if they've removed dairy and gluten and the other main offenders, but they still feel like our food's irritating them. You can do a test called Pinner test. So it sounds like Pinterest, but it's called Pinner test. And that's a food intolerance test I've used. And it's the only one I tend to recommend because I think the other ones aren't as good. They're not as specific or sensitive in their kind of results. And so that can be really, really helpful. So what does this actually look like? So I've told you a little bit of my story, and I did stool tests. I did food intolerance tests, all of those kind of things. And I think they were really instrumental in me just ditching my IBS. But what would this look like? How does this work? So I'm going to tell you a story of one of my old clients who I'm going to call Emily. That's not a real name, but just for the sake of it. So she came to me, young, healthy-ish, but had really bad diarrhea, a lot of toilet drama, was really embarrassed, couldn't zip up her work trousers at the end of the day, often had to leave meetings to go and like pass wind or just unbuckle her jeans, her work trousers, had a lot of problems going to the toilet, often was really anxious about it, generally ate a healthy diet. She was of a kind of Mediterranean roots and heritage, so a lot of Mediterranean healthy olive oils and basil and tomatoes. So there was, you know, and some wine in there. It was a relatively healthy diet, but she was struggling with the pain of bloating, being bloated, terrible diarrhea going on, and was just a bit of at a wit's end, to be honest. So we did what I did do with all my clients. I worked with her over about 14 weeks. And we just looked at why. We asked this question, why. So I was looking at, does she have SIBO? Is there a diverse? Like, what is going on? And for this particular client, I felt like a lot of it was probably just to do with her kind of gut lining. I didn't think there was SIBO going on just based on some of her other symptoms. And a lot of it also was to do with supporting her nervous system as well in terms of helping with going to the toilet and having a bowel movement, but really supporting gut health. So we did a bit of a cleanse to get out some bad bacteria. I suspected there was maybe sort of a gentle or a mild infection in her gut. We introduced lots of good bacteria. We changed her diet. We looked at food intolerances. We added some supplements in, because if you've had IBS for a long time, you've not been thoroughly digesting your food. So your actual mineral and vitamin status can be really low and impaired because you're not, it's a digestive problem. You're not optimally digesting your food, so that you're probably not getting your B12, maybe your iron. You're not necessarily absorbing all these really important nutrients. So we replaced those nutrients, and within about 12 or 14 weeks, by the end of it, she was having a regular poo every day, no drama, no diarrhea, had lost a little bit of weight, she didn't need to lose loads, and was feeling really good and really confident in her body. And she'd been struggling with this since she was a child. So from like 4 years old, she'd had diarrhea and problems, and going to the toilet was really, really difficult and really stressful from a really young age. And she'd tried everything. She'd seen all the doctors. She'd buy supplements herself. She'd tried things herself. She'd done the medications. She'd done it all. And she felt like she ate a healthy diet, which on paper she did, but it wasn't the right diet for her. And it wasn't the right diet to heal her gut and restore that gut lining and restore that kind of diversity in her kind of gut. And then I had another client called Sarah, who's similar, but at a different end of the spectrum. She'd just been constipated. She couldn't remember a time when she wasn't struggling to go to the toilet, wasn't straining, wasn't painful, wasn't dramatic since childhood. She tried every laxative, every pill, prune juice, apricots, oats, gels, everything. And she was gotten to the point where she was still only going for a bowel movement about once a week. She ran her own business. She was wanting to go away, and it was embarrassing with a partner and, you know, all of those things. And often a lot of constipation comes with a lot of bloating, a lot of discomfort, a lot of unpleasant wind as well. And when she was working with clients in a business, just, you can imagine all of those things going on. And a similar thing, we just did the same process, looked into her health history, figured out what her why was, what was going on. Looked at any food intolerances. We got rid of any of the bad bacteria, did a bit of a clear out, really supported her liver. That was really important for her. introduce some good bacteria, got the right minerals and vitamins, kind of get those replenished. So where I suspected there was depletions. And then she was just pooping every day. And she was emailing me just being like, this is awesome. Because if you've only been going to the toilet once a week and then you go once a day, honestly, your life changes because it's so good. So it is possible. And I share those stories just to know that it is, you know, it is possible when it comes to, it's just asking the question, why? Why is this happening to me and what can I do about it? Because there is so much you can do about it. And there's so much that you can do alongside any medical interventions that you're having. You know, this isn't either or. It's not, oh, you have to work with a nutritionist and holistically or work with a doctor. No, you can do them both together. Integrated practice is really, really, really helpful. So I hope that has been helpful. This is part one of this kind of beat the bloat, kind of how I ditched IBS. And then the next session or the next part that I do in this is going to be looking at the specific food and supplements that have been really helpful. But I really want to lay the foundation, look at why you might have IBS, share my story with it to hopefully empower you to feel less embarrassed about your health story and any symptoms, whether it's IBS related or not. And really talk about different tests that you can do and what are the options for you when it comes to IBS. And these are all things that I've done for myself and I've done with countless clients in order to just make improvements. So if you know you're looking to ditch IBS, then head over to supernaturallyhealthy.org and click the work with me tab on there. And we can book in a call and figure out if this kind of one-to-one program would work for you and if you're at the right stage where you're ready to dive in and beat your own IBS. So you can do that at the Work With Me page at supernaturallyhealthy.org. Otherwise, I hope this has been really helpful. If you love this podcast and listen regularly, I'd love it if you left a review and subscribed. That would be great. Tell your friends. If you have a friend with IBS, why not just post this on their Facebook page or text this link to them? That would mean so much. And the more women that can feel good about their bodies, not be stuck on the toilet, then I'm positive that the more women that are healthy, the more that the world will change, the more that we'll see injustices made right, the more that we'll see so much awesome social change when women are well and healthy and able to do the things that they're really excited about and able to move on from just surviving and really learn how to thrive. And when we're thriving, we can do amazing things in the world. So share it with a friend. Otherwise, thank you for joining me. I really value your time. And I'm so excited that you are on this journey of improving your health, of looking at the food you're eating, and really creating this kind of supernatural health in your own body. That is so amazing. And I'm really privileged to be in your ears that you are listening to me right now. I don't take that lightly. I know time is precious. And I'm so excited to get to help you along your way. So reach out if you need help. And if you need me, call me, no matter where you are, no matter how far. Sorry. Yeah, this is going to turn into karaoke. This is what happens when you put a microphone in front of me. So I'll end on that. Sending you love. I'll see you next week. Bye.